things a drag? Is your morning coffee fix just not enough? Then it's time to get up to get down. Check out Moving in the Right Direction Radio every Thursday morning between 6 and 9 a.m. Join thousands gathered around the radio. Your programmer, host, and DJ, David James, will deliver the finest in underground electronic music and beyond. Moving in the Right Direction will bring you guest DJ sets from local heroes and the international jet set, along with interviews with both local and international producers. So tune in and move in the right direction.
Celebrating 15 years, the Imaginative Film and Media Arts Festival, October 22nd to 26th in downtown Toronto, celebrates Indigenous artistic excellence and perspectives with over 120 films, 4 exhibitions, stunning interactive work, and special 15th anniversary program. Early bird passes are now on sale at imaginative.org, in person at the Tiff Bell Lightbox, or by phone at 1-888-599-8433. Single tickets go on sale October 1st, and join us for our kickoff screening of the smash musical hit from Australia, The Sapphires, on October 1st at the Tiff Bell Lightbox at 7 p.m. Visit imaginative.org for all our programming and download the free Imaginative app. The Imaginative Film and Media Arts Festival. Original. Indigenous.
The new Sound of Your City membership drive begins Monday, October the 20th. But if you donate right now or before midnight Sunday, October the 19th, you will be eligible to win one of our early bird prizes, which include a Samsung smart camera. So please go to CIUT.FM and click the donate button now. You can make your donation by using your credit card through PayPal, even if you do not have a PayPal account. Donate before midnight Sunday, October the 19th, and not only will you be entered into the early bird draw, but our grand prize draw as well. So please don't hesitate. Donate now at CIUT.FM.
Did you know there are now 8 different ways in which you can listen to your favorite programs on CIUT? From Barrie to Buffalo, Kitchener to Coburg, you can pick us up on 89.5 FM. We also stream online at www.ciut.fm, on Rogers Digital Cable, Channel 946, Channel 970 on Bell 5 TV, Star Choice Satellite offers CIUT on Channel 826, and you can pick us up on the TuneIn Radio app and under College and Campus Radio on iTunes. Finally, you can listen or download CIUT program archives at CIUT.fm. CIUT 89.5 FM, delivering the new sound of your city everywhere.
Hi, you are listening to Evidence on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Fox. Coming up on the show, Carmen Romero will be talking to her about her upcoming solo performance Saturday, October the 18th, 8 p.m. at Winchester Street Theater. And after that, Catherine Hernandez and Sebastian Hine on their works in the second annual presentation of Aft Rock Plays, running October 10th to 25th. But first off, we have Erin Poole here, the immortal Erin Poole.
Hello.
And hi. And she's going to be at the Citadel.
Yes.
Coming up.
Very soon. Next
very,
week.
Very soon.
Yeah, next Thursday.
Well, Erin, I know we've done this before, but just talk a bit about your background, and then we'll get right into the production.
Okay. So I trained at a studio out in Pickering called Pickering School of Ballet, and I did a lot of ballet, Cicchetti syllabus growing up. And I went to a high school in North York, Cardinal Carter Academy for the Arts, and that's where I really started to get more into the modern dance, And then upon graduation, I went and did some more ballet training in Marseille, France. So I was really on the ballet path, but since I've returned to Toronto, I've just fallen in love with contemporary dance, and I still use a lot of my ballet technique, but I've done a few workshops and got to know the Toronto dance community and started working.
I'm curious to how you fell in love with it. Like, what aspects of contemporary dance interested you?
Well, I feel in comparison to ballet, there's just so much more freedom of expression for me personally. I was always told that I had the body for ballet, but I never quite had the passion when I was on stage as I did when I could just be free and interpret a little bit more. So that was how my love started for contemporary dance, I guess.
And as a developing artist, I can imagine that has probably started to change a little bit, your desire and your passion while on stage. What has shifted that now as you've moved into doing more performances?
Yeah, I guess something that's shifted for me a lot is the discovery or learning how to discover what my own body can do, as opposed to throughout my training and throughout different workshops and, you know, when I first started working, I did a lot of imitating. Like, I would see something that I really loved, like the way someone was dancing, and I would try and imitate that. And that's a great tool. But now as I continue to work and perform, I'm really taking that into what that means in my own body and, you know, like what my body can do. And that's kind of taking a new ownership, I guess, of my own dancing. So. Yeah.
How did you become or meet Laurence Lemieux and become involved in this project we're going to talk about here?
Laurence and I met. Laurence was choreographing for a show that ProArte was putting on. It was called Short Stories back in May, I think it was 2013, so not that long ago. And she was creating a piece based on Elvis. It's called Looking for Elvis. So, yeah, so she worked with some ProArte dancers. It was the first stages of the creation. And then Laurence later went on to put that as a full-length piece, as a production with Coleman Lemieux, her company. So she hired me to work with her on that. That was in May. That was this past May. And so when I got the email that I was going to be able to dance with her in a duet, I was just thrilled. So, yeah.
And then you got involved with a production now with a very curious name.
Oh, yes.
So let's start right there.
With the name? You want to start with the name?
Yeah, let's start with the name because it indicates content in some way, right?
Yeah, well, it's an original word creation by Gadfly. They always like to remix things and create something original, but it comes from the word duplicate. So the show is called Uplica. That's how you say it. Everyone's like, how do you say this? So it's derived from the word duplicate. And so the show is a duet between Laurence and I, and we both have very contrasted characters. I play more of a silhouette character or a shadow or a duplicate, mm-hmm. perhaps you would call it, or a different version of her. So that's where the name came from. I'm not too sure. I mean, Gadfly, they're always trying to take the next step, and that comes even out in their name as well as their choreography. So
the full name of the piece is called Uplica, A Silhouette of Doubt.
Silhouette of a Doubt.
Of a Doubt. And Gadfly had actually tailor-made this piece for the both of you. Can you talk to us a little bit about the creation process?
Sure. Yeah. It's an interesting process because we have the two choreographers, Ophelio and Apollonia, and they come from more urban or street dance style, and they're working with two contemporary dancers. So by tailor-made, meaning they really collaborate with us and what their movement style looks like on a contemporary dancer's body. But then they also push us to try and achieve, you know, their style as well. So Laurence and I have, we've had our struggles trying to learn and pick up some of their movements, but they're great at adjusting or explaining or really getting into how it is that they move, because there's many isolations and some intricate footwork and some of these elements that we don't always use in contemporary dance. So So it's been a collaboration between us and them, for sure.
So they're using urban dance elements, because after all, that's what they're involved in.
Yeah, there's some of those elements, for sure. Yeah, so that's what makes it exciting
right.
for us.
And what about the costume design?
The costume design, it's by Hoax Couture, Jim and Chris, and they are amazing. I mean, we have a team of amazing collaborators with this work. Yeah, I won't give away too much with the costumes. Laurence and I have very contrasted, different costumes. And I won't give away too much about them, actually, because there might be a surprise.
No.
You have to see the show.
We are talking to Erin Poole about Uplica, Shadow of a Doubt. And we have a ticket to give away for Saturday, October the 16th, 8 p.m. It all takes place at the Citadel, 304 Parliament Street. And the number to call is 416-946-7000. That's 416-946-7000.
And now, the piece is only 1 hour in length.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So for the full length of the 1 hour, is there any breaks or pauses at all for the audience to be able to interact with what's happening on stage, or is it full movement for the full hour?
It's a full dance piece, so there's no intermission, and there's not a chance for the audience to really break out of that watching the dance. There are four chapters, so it is, the piece is segmented into different sections. We're going to flow through them fairly quickly, but you sort of have a moment to adjust to a new scene.
So you'll
have time to process that.
Okay, and the creative consultant on the piece.
Mm-hmm. Ken Gass.
Yes. Share with us a little bit about Ken.
Yeah, amazing. It's been amazing having him. He's our production consultant and sort of an outside eye. And he's helped us dig a little bit more into the concept and our what we're feeling in the moment and how we're interacting with one another, Laurence and I. And he's also helped Apollonia and Ophelio sort of with the bigger picture. There's a few production elements, and so he's been great to have. He's so sweet.
Now, Ken is the original founder of Factory Theater.
Yes.
Way back.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably won't know that, but it was quite an exciting years when he was at the helm there.
Yeah, I know. So it's an honor to have him in
now
the
another,
studio with us.
Another name that's connected with everything is John Sowski, connected with theater, dance, and
yes,
music.
John's
bands.
Everywhere.
So
yeah.
Talk a bit about him and how he's created the music for this.
Well, it's completely original. John has composed everything from scratch, and again, it's tailor-made for this specific piece, and he's been amazing. He'll come into rehearsal, and he'll be so present and really take in what we're working on. Like, it's just a regular rehearsal, and so he'll watch what we're doing, and he'll take notes from the choreographers, and then he comes up with the most intricate, amazing, and, you know, these beautiful sound scores. So the music's been a huge role. We did a lot of creation in silence, like back in July when we first started creating. We created a lot without music, so to have John's music is just adding a whole other layer to what we're doing now in the studio.
Of course, yeah. And I would imagine that what's fantastic about having the composer come right in is that he can continue to be inspired by what's happening on the floor.
Yeah.
Did Gadfly provide any type of influence as well in terms of how they wished for the music design to pan out?
Yes. I think they were specific with certain elements, like, you know, they love the beat, so we have some amazing beats and bass and some driving rhythms. But then John adds his own flair, and they've really collaborated between the two. So it's a mix of specific instruction, I think, and then also John's brilliant mind going off and creating some cool music. Yeah.
And we still have that one pair of tickets to give away. It's for Thursday, October the 16th. The number to call is 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. So, anything else you want to say about this production? Otherwise, go and see it.
Yes, come and see it.
It's at the Citadel. You should mention that
it's
space.
It's at the Citadel,
It's on Parliament Street, and it's a nice little space.
Yeah, it's a nice little space, and it is going to be transformed. You're not going to recognize that you're at the Citadel.
Okay.
Haha, hint, hint.
So we're
using the space a little differently, and Simon Rossiter is our lighting designer, so he has created some amazing, amazing atmospheric and lighting. So that's great. And it's been amazing. Like I said, we have a great team of collaborators, and everyone's really excited about it. Everyone is, okay, how can we tweak this? How can we make this better? And we're always working on that. So
great.
So
wonderful.
It's a great show.
So Saturday, October 16th to 18th, October 23rd to 25th, the Citadel, 304 Parliament Street. That's right at the corner of Dundas, behind the Native Center, I think, there. And you can go to ColemanLemia.com for all the information. Thanks for coming on here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up right after the... a break here, Carmen Romero here on CIUT 89.5 FM. Welcome back to Evidence here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Fox.
And I'm Nicole Hamilton.
And with us now is Carmen Romero on her show taking place Saturday, October 18th at the Wench. Welcome, Carmen.
Hello.
Now, that was kind of a nice, exciting way to open this. That's your own music?
That's correct. That was actually taken from a rehearsal, so those are my feet on the floor, and what you heard in the back there was Scott Metcalf on piano, Benjamin Burrill on guitar, and then Sylvia Tamis, which is our flamenco vocalist, doing palmas for the clapping, and Fernando Gallego, who's also our flamenco vocalist, doing the palmas.
Right. Now, tell us a bit about the company, when it was founded, and what you were aiming to do in Spanish dance when you founded it. Your focus.
Right. Well, Compañía Carmen Romero is actually the second name for the company. We started off as Carmen Romero and Candela Flamenco back in 1992. Yes, I know.
I'm sorry.
And I've been dancing long before
seen
then,
you
too.
Since that long.
I know, but it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good. But I think when I started, really, it was just an accident in the sense that I've always danced. And I've been performing since the age of 9. I started when I was 8, and I've been performing since the age of 9. And I've been receiving remuneration for my performances since the age of 13. So it's been a while. And it's always been a passion, and I've always done it. I went to school, did the university thing, and I think when I say it's an accident, in the sense that putting the company together was an accident, really. It just happened because I was getting a lot of shows, and then people would say, what's the name of your group? Well, then, you know, on the fly, we came up with Candela Flamenca. And then we started to do some serious work when people started coming to the show and, giving us some suggestions, saying that, maybe we should start looking at funding to further develop the work. And that's how I started to get into the whole, you know, looking at what I do as more of a serious venture and not just something that I just did for fun. I still do it for fun. It's what keeps me here. But in any case.
That's what I like about it, the personalized spontaneity of it, the kick ass. No, that's wicked. It's like really hard driving in your face, and
it
I
is.
Love it.
It is, and I think so. The company's gone through many things. I mean, my main focus has always been on maintaining and preserving the cultural roots of the art form, because of course, when you're doing a cultural art form, you're representing a country, a people, a history.
Mm.
You have to take it quite seriously. Do it well and do it to the best of your abilities, you know. And then, of course, there's my curiosity. And living in Canada, I'm exposed to many different things. And so I have been influenced, and that is what my work is. It's culturally rooted, however, it's influenced, and it's my personality mixed in there.
And the company has hit some milestones, Madrid, Spain.
Yes. Well, we performed in Madrid, Spain back in 2000 at the Certamen de Coreografía de Danza Española y Flamenco. Sounds very...
It sounds beautiful.
The accent, yeah. So we were the first company, the first Canadians to represent at that festival in Madrid. We did quite well. We also performed in Nîmes, France, at the International Flamenco Festival there. And throughout the years, we've hit many other milestones as well. One of the, just to bring you up to the scratch here, just recently I performed at the International Castanet Festival in Girona, Spain, which for me was a super treat because I've never participated in a castanet festival. This particular show, Y Entonces, features three works, and the first one is a jazz piano piece with castanets, me playing castanets and dancing, which was the piece that I performed in Girona, Spain. So actually, we actually started touring in Spain in July, and from there we went to Victoria, BC, to Montreal, to Calgary, to Winnipeg. Our next stop is here, Toronto, and then we have Vancouver with Y Entonces.
Mm-hmm. So what can we expect in this show?
So I'm really excited about the show. I'm always pumped about the shows that I do, but this one came together quite interestingly. A couple of months back, sadly, my father passed away suddenly while I was choreographing a film. And so life happens when you're thick in your work. And so I took care of my dad. that I had to come back, and I had to come back, and I had to finish the film. And then when I finished the film, I had to go to Spain. And when I finished Spain, I had to go to Montreal, and I had to go to Montreal. It just kept going, and I was so grateful for this keep going, because it really allowed me an opportunity to take care of my dad internally, emotionally. However, I have to say that when I went to Montreal, there was something very special that happened in Montreal. It was just supercharged. And there's a difference when you walk into a festival with the door closed and with the door open. And I felt that when I walked into Montreal, the door was open. And so it only allows you to be the possibly best you could be. And so Y Entonces is a show that amalgamates three different pieces. The first piece is May I Join You, jazz collaboration with Scott Metcalf. The second piece is Uno, Dos y Tres, which is a recitation from a poem, from the 1920s. And it's spoken word and it's body percussion that was initially brought on through an invitation from the Body Percussion Festival in Toronto that happened. This particular work was supported by the Ontario Arts Council, so I'm very grateful for that. The last piece is Mi Soledad, my solitude, which basically brings it all together. And Mi Solitude is kind of how I've been dealing with certain things. I've been dealing with things in solitude, and I'm grateful for my art form to hold it all together and to put it in a way that I can express it personally, beautifully, and well supported.
Mm-hmm. And how long is each piece?
Well, May I Join You is about 11 minutes long. Uno, Dos y Tres is around 12 to 14. Mi Solea is about 20 minutes long, which is an official length for a flamenco performance. Flamenco dance is a solo dance, and so because we improvise, and all three pieces are structured improvisations.
Yeah. We are talking to Carmen Romero about our upcoming show Saturday, October 18th at the Winch, 8 p.m. How important to you in this show is costume design and lighting?
In this show, actually, it's quite interesting because, you know, I'm always thinking about how you can perform in as many different venues as possible, because livelihood of a piece is really important when so much goes into funding and that. So I try to make sure that the piece stands pretty strong alone. However, for May I Join You, the lighting is very much cabaret, and that's the intimacy of it. Uno, Dos y Tres is very stark, because the piece is about life and death. It's about ethics, you know. It's about bullfighting, and do I kill the bull or do I not? You know, and Mio Solea is also very, so the lighting actually in Uno, Dos y Tres is just a down pool. It's a straight down pool. You don't actually really get to see my face unless I put my head up, and that's intentional. And the costume, actually, I'll just say something about Uno, Dos y Tres. So the costuming was done by Patricia Cueva, who I found on Kijiji, an amazing costume designer who is no longer here. She moved out to Edmonton, but she created some amazing pieces for me, and Uno, Dos y Tres is one of them. It's a bullfighting piece. It's a bit, I guess you could say, extravagant. So when I walked into the studio with it, Silvia Temi said to me, "Oh, girl, you're not going to wear that, are you?" So, you know, when you've just spent like $400 on a piece and they say, "Are you going to wear that?"
Uh-oh.
Because really? And my first thought was, "Oh my God, I just lost my confidence in this piece." But then I said, "Hold on, you have to see it on stage. You know, this piece I can't do in just any lighting. This piece I need to do in darkness, you know." So that's important. And the final piece, again, is very, the final piece is a very flamenco cabaret piece as well. The whole Y Entonces really is about not just the movement, but it's really about the music. And that's why I wanted to open up this segment with the music, because we're using piano, guitar, and vocals in a way that we haven't done before.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. Carmen, for coming on Evidence and talking about this show. Now, the website, I guess you just go to, is buddiesandbadtimes.com?
No, that's the other show.
Oh, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one here. CarmenRomero.ca.
CarmenRomero.ca.
Hey,
or actually,
hey, that way you good, different audiences.
You know what, I'm going to go check out his show, actually, either this weekend or next weekend. I was just talking to him outside.
Yeah.
But, and what I was going to say, though, is that find me on Facebook and Carmen Romero on Facebook, and I chat a lot on there. I also have a blog called Gay. As my website is both, you know, just a regular website that's static, and then it's connected to my blog.
Great. Okay, thanks again, Carmen, for coming on.
Thanks so much.
And the show is October 18th, 8 p.m. at the Winch, and that's 80 Winchester Street in Cabbagetown.
That's right. Actually, for tickets, just quickly, go to CarmenRomeroAndThen.Eventbrite.ca.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. coming up, Catherine Hernandez and Sebastian Heinz on their works in the 7th annual presentation of AFC Rock Plays at Buddies here on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Oh, sometimes I get a good feeling, yeah. Yeah. I get a feeling that I never, 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 never had before, no, no. Yeah. I just want to tell you right now that, I believe, I really do believe that something's got a hold on me, yeah.
Oh, I see them.
Hi, and now we have Catherine Hernandez on, along with Sebastian Heinz, and they're on their show taking place October 10th to 15th, to 25th, rather, at Buddies in Bad Times. Hi, Catherine.
Hello there, how are you?
I'm just fine. And Sebastian.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi. we have to, I guess, talk to you first about your production. So let's start with your background, Catherine.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So my background, and I'm sorry, I'm actually in the theater right now because we're in the middle of Tech Dress, which is why I only have about 5 minutes. My background is in, it began with Filipino folk dance, actually. My mother was a veteran of Filipino folk dance education in Canada. We would travel to different cities, meet with the Filipino youth there, teach them the traditions, and basically leave them behind, hoping that they would continue the art form, which happened numerous times. There's actually some companies that are still alive today, thanks to my mother's loving hand. So I knew that storytelling was really important at that time. So that's how I began, and I knew that storytelling for people of color was extremely important to continuing our community traditions. So that's how I started, and here I am doing this play now.
And you became involved in community work in oppressed countries, marginalized, and et cetera, and that's also reflected in the work that you perform, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The first time that I worked with, the first time that I understood sort of the political stance that I had in theater was when I went to Colombia with Beatriz Pisano from Aluna Theater. She was doing research for her play, La Comunión, and so I went there with her, with my 5-year-old daughter, to what was the most dangerous barrio in all of Latin America at that time, which was Barrio La Onda in Colombia, in Medellin. So we went there. I taught theater movement and singing to ex-child soldiers, and realized then, it's like, what are we doing? What does theater actually mean? Theater means that we must be able to give a microphone straight to the person who needs to be heard. And at that time, in this particular situation, was definitely for ex-combatants whose stories are never heard by the general public. So from then on, I understood what my purpose was in theater, and it was to make change.
Okay. And the Femme Playlist, can you share with us a little bit about how that was conceived?
Yes. Back in 2012, I was interviewed by somebody by the name of Ron Jones, who is now definitely a brother. He is in Harlem, has a show called On the Move Radio, and what he does is he does this radio show where you do a playlist. And so you give your playlist of your life, and then you have an interview talking about what these songs mean. So between that and realizing that it was like this 3-hour conversation that he had to distill to 1 hour, meeting with numerous amazing queer femmes of color and realizing that their stories haven't been told, I knew that this play was important. And at that time, one of the most fiercest femmes that I had ever encountered, which is Kim Kitchen Milan, was a chosen sister of mine, was like, everything that you are saying is important, so keep on going. And so I did, and that's how this play came to be.
And it's so in-depth. It really is. It's described as being set to the music of your life. So that it uncovers a lot of realities that you have experienced throughout the course of your life. Can you dig a little deeper and tell us a little bit more about the piece itself?
Oh, the piece itself. Okay, well, following the lattice of an actual playlist, so the songs of my life, I uncover these certain scenes from my life that have shaped me into the person that I am as a queer brown woman, a single mother, and a theater artist. And so understanding, like, the pressures of, like, how slut-shaming has shaped me into the person that I am, that I am now unapologetically very sexual, how being a single mother, how that has grounded me in the art making that I do, because I do want, I only create art that I know that will change my daughter's life for the better. So you sort of see I talk about it at the very beginning of the play, the fact that the playlist is actually it's meant to be like a necklace. It is the author's energy in sequence, and so you see the songs going past just like beads in a necklace, with the stuff in between, the filler in between, being definitely scenes from my life shaping me into what I am.
And it was co-produced with Soolong Theatre?
Yes, that's correct. Soolong Theatre and Eventual Ashes and Be Current, and then being co-presented by Buddies in Bad Times at the After Rock play series.
Right. There's one last thing I'd like to mention. In your work and in others, I find that this, and what I like about it, is the raw emotion that's coming from being honest, of being yourself, or being your own individual. You don't see that, I feel, often enough. You know what I mean?
About individuality.
Individuality in performance. Being honest with themselves, expressing the person they are.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? In queer performance, what I find most definitely is that there's definitely a part of the genre is about understanding who you are and telling the truth about yourself. And usually that is the sort of the arc of the performance. With this particular one, is that definitely that arc is there, but then embellished with the idea of a playlist with the songs. Just because, like someone was asking me before, it's like, why? Why songs? Why dance? And I was like, well, because as a brown person, singing, dancing, and acting is actually what people might call multidisciplinary. Brown people have just always called it storytelling. That's just the way that we storytell. So that's just me being true to my roots.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Catherine, for taking the time
you.
Out to talk to us.
Yes, I know. We're so excited. The previews are starting tonight at 8 p.m., and thank you so much for talking to me here. I'm actually right underneath the spotlight, so thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Have a great first preview, Catherine.
Thank you, my love. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
It.
Okay. And, this takes place at Buddies in Bad Times, October 10th to 25th, and it's a double bill. And now we have the guy behind Brotherhood, the Hip Hopper.
The other double bill.
Sebastian Heinz.
That's right. Yeah.
And welcome.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here. I appreciate it.
Let's have something about your background first.
Okay, my background. So I started, my love of theater started when I did The Lion King, actually, when I was about 10 years old. And I played young Simba. I got to work with Julie Taymor and some of the most amazing choreographers and dancers that I've ever seen. And that started my love of professional theater and the possibilities for theater. So then after that, fast forward a couple of years, and I went to National Theater School. And then there I learned about vocal mask from Damian Atkins and Paul Dunn. And I don't know if your listeners are familiar with vocal mask, but it's the act of usually in a solo performance that one person just using a chair or a box, and they play like 15 different characters sometimes, and they're all talking to each other, and you're using your physicality and your vocal specificity to tell a clear story. And that's what got me excited about physical theater.
Let's go into that a bit, because I saw the video. Did you, Nicole, of his performance?
I did.
How difficult is it to make all those moves and twists?
It's really fun.
Change character. You have 8 characters, roughly, right?
I think in this show, in this new version, we've got like 15 different characters, actually.
Can you describe that process of changing voice?
Well,
moving, breathing?
Yeah. It's funny, like, I should say, I'm an only child, and this show was actually started out of the wanting to answer the burning question, what if I had a brother? Okay? So as an only child, you're sort of left to your own imagination. You're always making up characters. Apparently, I used to talk to the wall, which is pretty sad. I'm saying this because it was really, it's the best form of expression for somebody who grew up by themselves a lot, because you're creating these characters who have very specific physicalities, and you're trying to make it clear for the audience. So one of them is like, you know, like really, really tight in his throat, and the other one is like nice and smooth and nice and soft, you know, and he's like very tall. The other one is like really, really angry, and then you have like women who are, you know, like it's a, you develop a shorthand through all these characters, and after a while, it becomes kind of addictive, because you're like, how many characters can we add on and still keep it clear? You know, we've got a nerdy guy, like, he's got one physicality, he's got his hand to his ear, and then there's another guy, like a Tom Brokaw like character, who's very, very serious and talks like, you know what I mean? And then there's like the E-Talk Daily woman, and then after a while you just start to like build on this thing, and suffice it to say, it's just it feels great from the inside.
What disciplines of movement have inspired you over the years?
I think I took a couple dance classes in high school, and I really liked hip-hop dance. For the gesticular stuff, I really liked how sharp and the isolations in that. You'll notice in my work, I really like isolations and clarity of movement, mixed in with moments of loss of control and sort of wavy feelings. I really like physical theater, the dance side of physical theater, because you're still telling a story. The audience is still watching something that is clear, like it's evocative still, but it's still literal. And so we have an immediate connection to it, but there's still room for the beauty of dance to take over as well. Does that make any sense?
It does indeed.
Yeah. There's like a great gray area there where you're like, he's an angel, but he's also a guy, and he's dancing, and you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you sing and rhyme too?
I sing and I rhyme. We wrote a bunch of raps for the play. Actually, almost the whole thing rhymes. We have music that we wrote for it too. So it rhymes. I sing. I also do it in prose as well. So it's like a mixture of all those things.
And if you're just joining us, this is CIUT 89.5. You're listening to Evidence, and we have been joined by Sebastian Hines, playwright, performer.
Yeah, and co-composer.
Co-composer.
Yeah, and like partial producer, too.
You're in the wrong line.
Yeah, well, that's what you got to do to make it happen.
And so Brotherhood, the Hip Hopera. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that this was created and performed by you, but it was also directed by Karen
Randoja. That's
oh,
right.
Yes,
yeah, you got to know
really
her. Yeah.
Really
she's incredible. Yeah, yeah.
Theater.
Yeah, you know, started with Primus Theater, and she's a real mainstay of the theater scene in Canada. Canada. She's gone all over the country, done amazing things. I'm very lucky to be working with her. She is, I want to say, one of the best director dramaturges I've ever worked with. Mm. And her style is very much like my creation style, where I want to be on stage, sweating, doing it. I want her to say, what if this happens in this scene? And then we just improv it and see what happens. You know, even today we had a rehearsal and we were just fine tuning little bits, adding in tiny little lines just to hone the show. And she's not a director who's like, just stick to the script. It's like, the script and what? And what? How are we just going to refine this thing? And I love that about her.
So there's room for exploration.
Exactly, exactly. Right. And it has to breathe, right? You know, like the more you do a show, the more you understand the characters. Like we had a moment today when we were like, oh my God, never understood that about Julian, the younger brother, that he's, you know, he believes he's a star. He was born to be a star. The show very quickly is about two brothers who are hip-hop and R&B superstars, and they have a huge falling out, and it's about one brother coming to terms with the loss of the other brother. You just see them play off each other quite a bit and see their personalities, too.
And the dramaturgy is by Jody Estery.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. So Jody used to be a Montreal-based writer dramaturg. Now she works in Ottawa, and she was primarily there with me for the months leading up to this, developing this new story. I should mention that in 2012, I took a 60-minute version of the show to New York City to the United Solo Festival, largest solo festival in the world, and won the Best Emerging Artist Award. Big ups to me. Just had to throw that in. Yeah, she's laughing. But, you know, I just gotta say it sometimes. After that, like, that version of it that I'd created with Adam Lazarus, who you definitely know, I wanted to workshop it. I knew that it needed to go somewhere further and that we were scratching the surface of the possibilities of the story. And so for this After Rock festival, I've rewritten 2/3 of the show, and Jody was instrumental in driving the deepening of the storyline. Now, like, the third act feels like, did you see the James Brown biopic?
I don't think I've seen the biopic.
Get On Up. It's so good.
No, but I haven't.
Okay, so I took a lot of influence from that, just feeling like these are real characters with a big, epic storyline. And then the second act used to be this very happy love story between the mother and the father. We go back to the 1970s and learn about the kids' parents. And, like, it used to be very happy-go-lucky, and now it's, like, deep and dark. There's drugs involved. It's very, very frightening. But it's more grounded in reality, and I think it's going to touch people more.
Okay.
I talk a lot. Jeez, don't I? Don't I talk so much?
You can talk some more.
This is great.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
This is great.
But it sounds like a theme running through it is basically the impact of family on mm-hmm. a child growing up and
yeah.
how it affects you.
And music, too. The way that music has changed as well. Like, there's an evolution of music from, I don't know, like in the 70s, I feel like, late 60s, early 70s, the music was so hopeful. It was so much fun. Disco was like the endless possibilities of fun and dance and everything. And then you hit the 80s and it's like a lot harder. People wearing leather all the time. It's like kind of freaky. And then the 90s is like, and then, you know, 2000s, you've got NSYNC and boy bands. It's like a return to the poppiness. So, you know, we started in like the 70s and we've got this amazing Marvin Gaye track, this rare version of What's Going On that he did live. It's beautiful, and then you just see the family progress through the years, and like drugs start getting involved, and the kids are sort of crying, and then they have to, I won't spoil it, but they have to make a big decision, a big rift, and then we get to the now, and the music is hip-hop now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like hip-hop came out of the funk, it came out of jazz. It's a true original American art form, and I feel like not only do you feel a sense of evolution in the families, you also feel a sense of evolution in the music and how they're intricately related as cultural phenomena. Does that
right.
make sense?
It does.
Yeah?
It does, and it tells the story of the superstar duo,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cash Money.
Yeah, you can't say the other word. You can't Cash say Money. The other word.
And
am I allowed to say it? Because, like, no. Tez, I don't say it.
Go ahead.
Cash Money and Money Pussy.
Okay.
So it's chronicling their climb to success and their breaking apart and then their epic reunion.
Yeah.
Right.
But not in the way that you think.
It's,
It's insane. I really want you to see it. I mean, it's a huge story for 60 minutes, and it's one guy on stage telling the whole thing, and I feel like it's as much a story as it is like a feat in and of itself, which is one reason why I keep on coming back to it, because it's like, how much can we tell people, how much can we affect them with the story and keep it clear and tell the story that I want to, a massive story. It's a real balancing act, I'd say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you wind up with Catherine Hernandez?
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
Well, so B Current runs this thing called Rock Paper Sisters, and it's an incredible groundswell of work from African diaspora, primarily other diaspora communities, diverse communities, I should say, who are largely underrepresented in the mainstream theater scene. And Catherine and I had our pieces in the Rock, Paper, Scissors Festival, and then B Current extremely generously reached out to us and said, we've got this thing called After Rock. It's like the next level of Rock, Paper, Scissors. Will we put some funding into it? We give you guys a space. We give you guys a PR team. We give you everything that we can to make your show get to the next level, to a professional level that could actually be toured around somewhere, you know? And so we went into this amazing process over the last probably half a year or so of, figuring out what this double bill would look and feel like. How are we going to use the same theater space for two shows? Mm-hmm. There's a half an hour in between the shows, right? And we have starkly different sets. So there's this insane changeover that...
So it's a double bill.
It's a double bill. It's a double bill. Okay. And we're really pushing. I want your listeners to know that we're really pushing that people come for one show, they hang out for like half an hour, get a bite to eat or something, and then come back for the next. Because the shows are... You know, you heard hers. It's like it's a beautiful exploration of femininity, what it means to be femme, and mine, I'd say, is a real exploration of masculinity, what it means to be brothers, as well as the facade of masculinity. I play a lot of women in the show as well, and I think that is a nice breakdown of the masculine perceptions in it. You see this guy go from this like hardcore like rapper dude to like a stripper in one moment, you know?
Right.
And like I think that creates an interesting dynamic for being like, what the heck, what is this? What is a man? Who is, you know? What is a man? Could he also be a woman? He is right now. He's stripping for us. I don't take my clothes off, don't worry.
Oh. Okay, so each piece is how long?
They're like, this interview's done. No, I don't want to talk to this guy anymore.
I'm just sitting
and saying, what?
How long is each piece?
60. Catherine's is 60 minutes. I have up-and-coming Toronto hip-hop acts opening for my show every night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about 80 minutes long in total. So you get in there, we're playing this cool video of like all these famous hip-hop acts throughout the ages, and then we have like Iambic Pen and High Def, all these amazing rappers who have opened for like ASAP Rocky opening for the show. It's insanity. And then the show starts, and we start to create the fiction.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that it? I want to stay here all day.
Yeah, that's it. You want to stay here all day?
Yeah. Can I be a host on this too?
No, as I mentioned before, for Carmen Romero, all this takes place at buddiesandbadtimes.com.
That's right.
You can find everything taking place there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the upcoming events there are all quite exciting as well, as all seasons up there.
One more thing. So with Brotherhood, if you do a walk-up and you bring your sibling, you get 50% off the ticket price for your sibling.
Okay, well, look at that.
Okay.
Look at that.
Here we go.
Okay, and I would thank Carmen Romero for coming on, and her show October the 18th, 8 p.m. at Winchester Street Theater, 8 Winchester Street, and Aaron Poole on Uplica, A Silhouette of a Doubt, which shows October 16th to 18th, October 23rd to 25th, again, 8 p.m. and at the Citadel, which is at the corner of Dundas and Parliament. And I think we still have a ticket giveaway for that. No, it went. Great.
Nice.
I thought,
no
wow.
more tickets.
Mm. Finally, it went. Okay. All went. All went. It's all gone. It's all gone, guys. It's all gone. Everything's
yeah,
gone.
It's all gone.
We'll
yeah,
be gone.
Fire sale.
We'll be gone,
over.
Too.
Yeah.
Fire yeah. sale. We'll yeah. be sold.
Okay, cool. Liquidation.
Okay, next week we are going to have some Baroque dancers on from Opera Atelier. Actually, these are contemporary dancers who are also do marvelous Baroque dancing. Mm. And if you have never seen an Opera Atelier production, it's well worth seeing.
Check it out.
So go for Baroque and go to it. And also Bouchard Dance. That's Sylvie Bouchard, who's choreographing two plays. Mm. And that's upcoming too next week. Mm. And who knows what the third guest will be.
Brilliant.
I don't know yet.
TBA.
And lastly, we of course want to thank Mr. Sebastian Hines for joining us here in the studio.
Such
and
a pleasure.
Oh, God. I'd like to thank, who am I thanking?
You'd like to thank
Ariel and Jessica. And I guess I have to thank you, and you can thank me. And then we can thank each other, pat each other on the back, and that's the end of the show.
I want to thank you guys, too. I really appreciate being here.
You're great.
It's been wonderful having you,
Sebastian. I think we better go at this rate. We have been listening to Evan on CIUT 89.5 FM.